Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You have reached episode number 392, entitled New Show, Feeling Insecure, with Tim Nash, episode 1. It was published on Thursday the 3rd of October 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and we will get to that show in just a moment, but before then, a few very important bits of housekeeping. The first thing to mention is that if you are in the market, if you have any intuitions at all around the WordPress Black Friday space, well, head to our Black Friday deals page. It's very Spartan at the moment. There's almost nothing on there, but it's at wpbuilds.com/black. Once more, wpbuilds.com/black. And in the run-up to Black Friday, loads of plugin developers, theme developers, hosting companies will reach out to me, and I will put their deals all onto that one page so that you can search and filter and find all of the WordPressy things in one place rather than having to trawl through your email and all the various different sites. So let me mention it again, wpbuilds.com/black. If you'd like to sponsor that page, as WS Form have done, you'll see their logo right at the top, then hit the Get Started button in one of the little black cards. And also, if you have not put something on there before and you would like to, hit the Add a Deal button, which you'll find on that page. Fill out the form and we will put your product or service, your deal, onto that page free of charge. The other thing to mention is that Tim Nash, who is doing the show today, well, hopefully we'll be doing a masterclass with him live in London. It's going to be happening on Halloween, the 31st of October, so that's not far away. If you would like to find out more about it, it's at wpldn.uk/masterclass. That stands for WordPress London. It's the WordPress London meetup. wpldn.uk/masterclass. You can find the link in the show notes. But if you head over there, you'll be able to find out all about the things that Tim is doing. It's a half-day masterclass. It's in person. We're going to be in a room in London. And hopefully you will learn all of the bits and pieces to keep your website secure by auditing it, defining the scope, identifying vulnerabilities, and developing an action plan. So it really should be fun, and it would be very nice to hang out with you there. The last thing to mention is that if you would like to advertise on the WP Builds podcast, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. And we're very pleased that some companies have, in fact, done that, because the WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also joined by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for keeping the lights on over at the WP Builds podcast. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, it is Tim Nash, and we've started a brand new show. We're going to call this show Feeling Insecure, which is a bit of a strange title, but there you go. This is episode 1 of that show, and as I have done already with Ray Murray and also Courtney Robertson, this is a brand new show which is going to be coming out quarterly. There's a few more that I've got to reveal with some well-known names in the WordPress space, But Tim's going to be joining us on a regular basis about every quarter, every 3 months, to talk about internet security. And the idea is that we're going to raise some interesting things that he's seen more recently, as well as a few tips and tricks that you can implement on your WordPress websites right away. So, brand new show. I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on a brand new show of the WP Builds podcast by Tim Nash. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm okay. I'm a little poorly, so hopefully I can get through without too many coughs and splurts, but I've done okay so far.
I do love it how we do these things, like say, hello, Tim, how are you? Not like we've been on the call for about an hour already, just having a natter about the world in general. We really have put the world to rights over the last hour or so, but that's not anything you guys want to hear. You're here to listen to Tim Nash, and he's going to talk about security. But before we begin, and I get Tim to introduce himself properly, I just want to make an announcement about why Tim is here, really. And that is because Tim, bless him, has decided to come on the podcast on a regular basis, a bit like some of the other shows that we've got in the feed, about once every 3 months, so quarterly. Tim's going to drop in and talk about all the bits and pieces of WordPress security. Now, obviously, we can't cover everything, but the idea would be to cover off a few things that have happened during the past 3 months or quarter, and then maybe drop a few little tips and tricks towards the end that you can take away and implement on your WordPress websites. So that's going to be coming. So this is the first of those shows. Just before we hit record, we were throwing around names for what this show might be called, and we haven't come up with one yet. So it might have a really unexciting name. It might be a really glamorous name. We don't know, but we'll get one before it's actually published. So how are you doing, Tim? Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Good.
We will get through this.
We will get through it. He's been fairly poorly, so I've got to give him a bit of a hat tip and say thank you very much for making the effort. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself so that anybody listening to this, if they haven't come across you for the first time, if you're going to be talking about security, I think the word credentials come to mind. You know, you can't realistically talk about security without having a background in it. So just paint the picture of you and what your previous incarnations in security, hosting, anything you like.
Wow. I think the scary thing is the number of people who think that they can talk about security without any sort of credentials. My name is Tim Nash. I'm a WordPress security consultant. I've been involved in the sort of WordPress space for the last 2 years. You know, when you're starting to talk about decades,
yeah,
and you're thinking, yes.
Yeah.
But I've been around before plugins existed. And I got involved in the WordPress project because I wanted to build a site. I never managed to complete that. Instead, I got involved with doing all sorts of other things, including running a small development firm where we built payment gateways for large NGOs.
Wow.
And then I moved into working with a web host here in the UK, and suddenly went from going, oh, yes, I secure a few, maybe a dozen sites, to, 100,000 of them.
Oh, gosh.
Suddenly working at such scale and going, well, actually, as somebody who likes making sure everybody's sites are secure and are nice and neatly maintained, just knowing that there is a certain percentage of the sites I'm meant to look after are hacked because that's how laws of probability work is a very strange experience, and it's quite a stressful one. These days, I work with clients and help them not let their sites be hacked. And I am a huge advocate for WordPress security in general. So come on shows like this.
Nice. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So we know a little bit about Tim. I've just got to say a few bits and pieces of promotional stuff, I guess, really. A quid pro quo. Tim's come on. He's given up his time for free. So a nice thing to do in return for Tim is to let the WP Builds listeners know about some of the endeavors that Tim's got, and he's got a newsletter. So I'm going to encourage you to listen to this URL, pause the podcast, type it into your browser and sign up for it. You can find it at timnash.co.uk/newsletter. It's as you'd expect, timnash.co.uk/newsletter. It'd be really nice if some proportion of our listeners who are into security went over there and got onto Tim's newsletter. And it's regular. and entertaining. Tim does make an effort with his newsletter, unlike cough me. It's actually really worth reading. So go and check that out over there. But also, curiously, and I don't know if this will happen again, if you happen to be in the UK, Tim is doing a live event on Halloween, which kind of is perfect considering, you know, you like to tell scary stories about websites getting hacked. So Halloween, 31st of October, in the UK, in London specifically. Now, the place to find that is at the WPLDN, so the WPLDN website. And it's a masterclass all about WordPress security. It's kind of like a morning or an afternoon, I should say. Anyway, the point is you go in person. It's not like an online thing. And you can find that at wpldn.uk/masterclass. So wpldn.uk/masterclass. Tim, I've just mentioned the newsletter and the masterclass. Do you want to add anything to those two bits that I just mentioned? Did I miss anything out there?
No, other than I slowly but surely getting back into the sort of like meetup trail. So other than that, I will also be, so I'm doing WPLDN, which is WordPress London meetup, the same night as I'm doing the masterclass. And then I will be in Tunbridge Wells in a very early November.
Nice.
Go to a meetup there. Oh. So you might actually, if you're in the UK, as we started to get all our meetups going, you may well see me at a meetup. Do come along, do say hello. I always like talking to people.
Yeah, nice. And would we find information about that on your website? So if we went to timnash.co.uk, is that the kind of thing you publish?
Sure.
Over there?
Yeah. I'm thinking my website
maybe,
up today.
Maybe. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. You certainly will on the newsletter, which I tend to send out. You know, while it is regular, it becomes more regular when I'm doing it.
Okay. Okay. And do you do sort of client work still? Like, for example, if an individual listening to this is unfortunately, if has their client website or their own website hacked, do you take on auditing work, things like that? Do you do, you know, remedial work for things that are currently broken or inspecting things that, you know, somebody would like to have an audit and check that they're compliant?
All the above. My clients fall into roughly two groups. One lot is, help, we've been hacked. And the second group is, hey, we'd really like to not be hacked. And we want to be praised and told what a great job we've been doing. And that's what I like focusing on the second group, but obviously I'm more than happy to help the first group. But yeah, if you want a site review or code review, or if you're worried that your site has been hacked, do get in touch.
Nice.
I'm really friendly.
Yeah.
And you could have a nice calming chat.
Yeah, that's right. Calm you down, bring you back from the precipice. So that's the stuff about Tim. So like I said, the endeavor of this show is every 3 months or so to talk about bits and pieces that have happened of interest. Obviously, there isn't like this 3 month window here because this is the first show. So it could really stretch back a long way in time. But we've got three bits and pieces that Tim has brought to the fore. And so we'll go through those. That'll occupy most of the podcast. And then right at the end, and it may stay at the end, we might push it to the front, who knows, we'll do a few bits and pieces about WordPress security, little tiny bite-sized things that you might do that you perhaps have never heard of or thought about before. So with that in mind, let's crack into the three top stories. What have you got for us? So let me just say, I'm recording this on the 1st of October, 2024. If you're in the WordPress space, it's quite likely that you have seen the WP Engine versus Automattic story. I imagine we don't need to explain too much about that. But if you feel the need, Tim, go for it. But why is this one in? Because that felt like a story about, you know, a hosting company and trademarks and things like that. How does this in any way touch security? That's curious.
So I think we'll try and skip as much of the legal stuff as possible. As fascinating as it to us as individuals, it's not necessarily relevant. But during the backwards and forwards, and so we have two conflicting, very large companies battling it out with battles of words at the moment. But midway through this, WordPress.org came out via Matt Mullenweg and said, we are no longer allowing customers of WP Engine to access our services. And they effectively stopped any WP Engine customers from being able to do updates to WordPress core or updates to any plugin that was held on the WordPress repository, which is most of the plugins that you will use So if you went into your admin interface and you went to go and click update, nothing happened. You got an error saying, we're sorry, you can't connect. If you tried to update to your latest version of WordPress, same problem. If you tried to use WP Engine's Smart Manager, which is their built-in plugin, same problem. If you were using automatic updates, you couldn't do it. If you were using WP CLI, you couldn't do it. The only way to get your site up to date was for you to personally open up a browser, go to the website, download the plugin, and get it onto your site. Be it through you uploading it yourself or you going and using some other mechanism that you have, but you had to go and move this around. So the connection between your website and WordPress.org ceased.
I'm just going to put this in there right now because honestly, this podcast has such a wide audience and many of them will be technical. And so forgive me, just skip forward like 30 seconds because you'll know this, it'll be obvious to you. But we also have a fairly large proportion of people who really, WordPress is a bit of a thing that they toy with and they play with and they don't really know the underpinnings of it. And so they kind of regard it almost like a SaaS product. You know, they go to their website and they log in and then they do things and then they log out. And part of the plugin bit, you know, the updating the plugins from the repo kind of almost feels like that's all happening inside of your website. So you go update plugins and there they all are. They're just there and you click update and it just happens. But of course, that's bound, whether you knew it or not, to WordPress.org. WordPress.org managed the WordPress plugin and theme and various other different bits and pieces. But for now, let's stick with those. So you're actually calling the WordPress.org website, and that's where those files are coming from. And so it may look like a SaaS and feel like a SaaS to you. The point being, WordPress.org can cut off access, and did cut off access, to servers inside the WP Engine infrastructure. So if you weren't on WP Engine, there's no story here for you. You didn't need to worry about it. But if you're a customer of WP Engine, they did this presumably, I don't know, by identifying certain IP address ranges or however they did that. But anyway, that's what's going on. So that may come as a surprise to you that WordPress.org is actually kind of controlling, that's the wrong word, you know, that they're the people who provide that service to you.
I mean, I actually think controlling is a really good word to use in this particular instance. They are the controller of the data and hold the plugin. They also store that all those plugins. So they store the zip files that your site then pulls onto your machine. So if you imagine you sit there with going to an example of, let's say you're going to download a new application on your computer. You go to a website, you click on it, it downloads into your downloads folder and you unzip it and drag the application. That's effectively how plugins work.
Right.
You're making a remote request to WP.org's server, WordPress.org server, it and say, hey, I'd like the zip file. And they go, sure, here's the zip file. Come across. Now, to make things more complicated, when you go in, you get those little red icons with the number on there to tell you an update's available. Well, the way we interact, your website interacts with WordPress.org is it uses WordPress.org's API. So it basically says, hey, I've got these plugins. Any updates? And WordPress.org says, yes. But that interaction was also lost. So WP Engine customers wouldn't know that there were updates available.
Okay. Interesting.
So now we have two problems. One, we can't get the update in the first place. That's awkward. That means that if there was a major security issue, and I don't know, Bob's plugin needed to be updated, you couldn't just press the button to get that update. But worse, you wouldn't know that there was an update available.
Okay.
And in terms of security and WordPress security, the biggest issue and the main reason WordPress sites get hacked is because they do not keep things up to date. We've spent an awful lot of time within the WordPress community drilling this into people that you must keep your site up to date. That is how you get hacked, is if you do not keep your site up to date. And so it becomes an issue when you can't update your site and you can't see if there are updates available. And this has now been partially rolled back. There was a reprieve in inverted commas where basically the services would turn back on. And WordPress engine.
You said it. It's going in the record.
WP engine. I was conflating the two together just then. Yeah. But yeah, WP, apparently it's true. But WP engine have said that they are putting a permanent fix in place, which appears to be that they are doing effectively a mirror. So that's where they have all the content from the WordPress.org repository on their own servers. And instead of interacting with WordPress.org, you would interact with their server.
Okay.
Which is sort of what Mullenweg asked them to do. He said, you're using our resources. We don't want you to use our resources. You should be maintaining your own mirror. But that opens up so many interesting problems and questions about how they're going to manage this, maintaining these mirrors. And leaves some really big questions that still haven't been answered. One of which is, well, WP Engine manage a plugin called ACF, which is used by a lot of people.
I think it's more than 2 million. It's enough that it's got, you know, six zeros at the end anyway.
Yeah. So advanced custom field used by lots of sites. The moment it would appear that WP Engine staff cannot push new releases into the WordPress.org repo. Now, if they've got ACF Pro, so the premium version, they still control that distribution pipeline. So they can still push releases for that, but they can't push releases for the pre version. And all of a sudden, we're now like, oh, okay, we're now deliberately blocking access to allow developers to push changes. And you're sitting there going, oh, wait, is this a good thing? And should we have this single point of failure? Lots of people are looking at this and going, wait, WordPress.org is where we get all this from. What happens if it goes away, whether that goes away intentionally, i.e. someone blocks you, or just goes away? Stuff breaks on it. Things go down. How are we going to handle this as a community? And nobody likes EULAs, so end user license agreements. But do I have a license agreement with WordPress.org?
Good question. I don't know. What's the answer to that?
As far as there isn't one that's written down that says, hey, you do this. There is no, you're not in a contract with
No.
Because it's just a service that an awful large part of the web is now going, wait, I don't have a contract with these people. I don't have a license agreement. I don't have any on paper right to this data. But then you've got plugin developers who are pushing their code, assuming it will be distributed. And distributed fairly and freely and all that good stuff. And these are all coming into conflict. And we are stuck in a place where, like, what do we do? There are several routes, and some of them are good, and some of them are bad, and some of them will fragment things. But from a security perspective, we should never be in a place where someone can turn off updates. That seems, I think everybody agrees. And I have no inside knowledge, but I think maybe the folks at WordPress.org and Matt realized, and that's partly where this reprieve came, was like, oh, maybe that was a line we stepped over. Opens too many worms. Let's try and roll it back a little.
I'll just briefly explain that as well. And I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to get into the whole, you know, whether you think one side is right or the other. Go and read all of the blog posts. Go and read all of the Twitter feeds. Make your own mind up. But we're just talking about the security thing. Yeah, the many. So as we stand at the moment, it's the 1st of October and it's in the UK. So it's kind of like 1 p.m. So there's more or less half a day, a little bit more, like 18 hours or something. Until that reprieve. So access was turned off for WP Engine. It was turned back on again. I guess there was a hue and cry or some realization that, you know, maybe there's unexpected consequences that you've just described. So it's been switched back on, but it will expire today. And at some point during the course of today, I'm imagining it's like California time or something like that, midnight, that will expire. And in the meantime, WP Engine have been doing remedial work to mirror, for to keep it simple, let's just say kind of copy, if you like, or be able to forward traffic towards WordPress.org. So hopefully that's fixed. But it does raise the question of collateral damage. There were obviously customers of WP engines, and the argument would go, well, they didn't know. You know, how have they got caught up in a debate that they knew nothing about? You know, they're just paying their monthly fee to WP Engine, a host that they thought was reliable and useful, and they'd chosen that one. And all of a sudden, they were not receiving updates, and they didn't even know that they were receiving updates. And honestly, the way of finding updates, given what the WordPress.org repo provides, the last 10 years of WordPress, nobody's been going and downloading files from WordPress.org, sticking them on your home computer, and then uploading them and unzipping them and all that. You've just been pressing buttons, you know, or text links inside of the WordPress backend admin area. And so it raises those questions, which we won't get into, but there was collateral damage. And like you say, unless ACF can figure out a way to sidestep this problem, that will continue as a problem from today, I think. That won't go away when the mirroring takes place, because they can't push the updates into the repo. Yeah. Gosh.
And weirdly, they probably will be able to push it into their own repo.
Yeah.
So WP Engine customers probably will get ACF update, which does open up the question, will they then say, and there's nothing guaranteed about this at all, there's nothing, but are they going to have to say, look, here is a link, this is a way to get ACF on your site. You use our mirror of the WordPress.org repo, and you get normal WordPress and ACF. That's a potential future route.
Yeah. I can't remember how ACF works, but I've got a feeling there must be, right? But I don't know if the free version, if the pro version, I should say, builds on top of the free version, or if the pro version kind of negates the need for the free version. Obviously, if you're on the pro version, then WP Engine can sidestep that whole problem, but they might have to gosh, it does get interesting, doesn't it? What do they do with that business? Do they hive it off to a different entity, or do they roll it all into pro and hope for the best? It's complex.
It's really complicated. Yeah. And then you're suddenly there going, we get very annoyed when developers like send like those full banner notifications.
Yeah, it's coming.
telling us. But if ACF doesn't have a way of letting people know, suddenly there must be a lot of developers who are like, oh, hang on, I don't have a way to communicate with my customers except through WordPress.org.
Yeah.
If I can't communicate with the end users and say, actually, you should download it from over here. But even if you can, then we are opening up all these potential problems where we have somebody malicious might come along and say, hey, oh, wait, I can send notifications out to all of these customers. What if someone takes over? I can very much see a well-meaning person say, oh, well, we'll let Joe take over the ownership of ACF on WordPress.org. This is hypothetical, but I can very much easily see someone going, oh, well, Joe can do it. Joe's trustworthy and reliable. And Joe gets to take over that repo because there's no rules or anything written down that says Joe can do it. The mechanism for managing and moving contributors and ownership is mostly automated, is just really sending some emails around and people clicking button. So I can easily see ACF accidentally being hijacked, or any plugin. We're just using ACF as an example in these sort of scenarios. And we could end up with a scenario where the WordPress.org version of ACF is no longer being managed by the people at WP Engine who are actually putting the fixes in.
Gosh.
And you might even find a scenario where the ACF version is now being the reverse mirror and is pulling its version from WP Engine's repo and pulling it back into WordPress so that the rest of people get access to it.
Honestly.
At which point we are in the world of this is just silly and come heads, bash heads. I think what we can say is it's not good.
No.
None of this is good.
Again, caveat emptor, we're not getting into the legal stuff. That's to be decided by, I imagine, fairly well-paid lawyers, and we'll see what happens. But,
yes.
But it feels to me like a week ago, just over a week ago, we had, imagine WordPress as a whole, this whole thing as a calm pond. There's not a ripple in sight. Somebody, then suddenly there was this massive boulder thrown And that's the story that we've got at the moment. And it feels like the splash has just gone away. All this tweeting and all these posts online, we're in the splash moment. But now we're going to start feeling the effects of the ripples spreading out. And, you know, this ACF thing is one example. The repo that WP Engine are going to have to in some way manage, and whether or not it promotes other hosting companies to take a look at their stack and think, well, gosh, maybe this could happen to us. I just don't know where these ripples are going to go, but it seems like, you know, there's possible ripples.
Infra changes.
Yeah, infra changes.
I think if you were a hosting company, you're looking at this now and going, okay, we need to have some sort of contingency plan.
Yeah.
And also, as if you're an agency or you have customers who don't really matter where your clients host, you're going to have to start thinking, I think now this is the time where people are going to wake up and go, oh, we need a contingency plan for what if this happens to our host. So it's going to help focus people into, we've been relying on this our whole 20-odd years. We just didn't think about it. And now we are thinking about it. And the answer could be, I thought about it. I'm putting my head firmly in the sand and hoping other people who are smarter than me will solve it. But for some people, that's a luxury they badly won't be able to have.
Yeah. The other bit in this story, we're going to talk about Patch Stack in a minute in the context of something very different. But there was a piece that you put into the show notes about Patch Stack in this story. And that was about their pausing, I think is the right word, or not releasing. Just tell us about that. So Patch Stack is a... well, I'll hand it over to you because you could probably summon the language better than me.
So Patch Stack, WordFence, and Automattic are the three organizations, who have the ability to publish vulnerabilities and issue out CVEs, which are a way for us as a much wider community of cybersecurity to say, oh, yes, this is a vulnerability. This is, and have a place and record for where that publishes the vulnerability and hopefully the fixes associated with it. So PatchStack regularly publish vulnerability reports. And by that, they say, plugin X had this problem. We worked with them, or the person who found the problem worked with them. It got resolved on this date. Here's some details about the problem. Done. Now, PatchStack said very quickly, you know what? We're not going to publish anything that's critical, high, or medium. So anything we think is serious and might have a direct effect on clients, we're just not going to publish it for a little bit. Which means that, because once something gets published, bad actors use that published data. Now, normally, when things get published, the patches have already been out for a reasonable period of time. And most people who are on automatic updates or even on a weekly update cadence will have been patched a little while back. So there's a little bit of a gap given through. But they said, no, we're just going to pause everything just in case there is anybody who isn't patched on WP Engine and won't have this ability to patch. And that was sort of that decision was taken, and there seemed to be very much two voices. And one was, well done, this is really good. I'm really glad you paused this. Don't give bad actors the opportunity to make hay out of this and exploit people on WP Engine. The other side of the argument was, well, hey, these vulnerabilities still exist. This is still, other people should know about these and be alerted to these. Is it fair that you pause this just for a small subset of users? And small, we're still talking, I think it was something like 13 million
sites, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, that's not a small subset of users in my head, but obviously in the wider 43% of the web, it's a very small subset of users. And I think I can see both sides of that argument, but ultimately PatchStack took that decision. WordFence sort of went, we're thinking about this, and obviously Automattic didn't say anything. And I can't imagine that for one second they were thinking, oh, I know, we'll pause this. I think that would have probably wouldn't have been a conversation that would have happened internally, given what was going on. But for PatchStack, they seem to have come out of this quite well. And I think generally I ums and ahs about whether I thought it was a good thing or a bad thing, but it did potentially protect. I don't know what was in their pipeline. Maybe their pipeline had actually dried up and they had no interesting vulnerabilities to publish. And so they were like, oh, well, this is a good excuse for us to all go and have a cup of tea for a little while and not have to do anything. And we can just use this as cover for not doing any work for a couple of
days. Nice.
I don't for one second truly believe.
No.
But and vulnerabilities are reported constantly. But it was a brave decision. And it felt very much like they were standing up for end users.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You've only got two. It's binary, that, isn't it? You've got two directions to go. You either do what they did or you do the opposite of what they did. And I can see harms in both directions and benefits in both directions. So flip a coin and see where it lands for you. But okay, so curiously, so that was all about the WP Engine story, which has been ongoing. And by the time we do our next show, let's hope that that one has figured itself out and what have you. But the next piece that you want to talk about is coincidentally about PatchStack as well, and about something that they're offering out. It's a new offering, and it's called the VDP, or the Vulnerability Disclosure Program. And I think what you want to get into here is basically what it is, but also whether or not we even need one. That's the question. Does WordPress need such a thing? So before we get into whether it's needed, tell us what it is. What is a vulnerability disclosure program?
So PatchStack have been really busy bees in the last few weeks, it seems. Obviously, they got a large amount of funding at WordCamp US, which got somewhat overshadowed with lots of different investors coming in. And just before WordCamp US, they came out with their vulnerability disclosure program, which there's a response to some legislation in called the European Cyber Resilience Act, which is going to be coming into force over the next few months. Like most European law, where it's at the European Union level, it sort of disseminates from the central point, and then individual countries convert that into laws, similar to GDPR. And it's the same sort of bulk legislation as GDPR is in place. The European Cyber Resilience Act is quite a broad set of terms and ideas and things around it, and individual countries are implementing it in different ways. One of the key components of that is this idea that a software and a hardware vendor is responsible for security, which sounds, well, duh.
Yeah.
But they've enshrined that in a way that basically says you have to take this seriously. You have to be able to prove that you are acting and making sure that the vulnerabilities are managed.
Can I just pause you there? Does that therefore imply the opposite is true now? If you release hardware and you release software, there's no legal obligation, there's no legal straitjacket to bind you to the updating of things. Are you basically free of the shackles of law to just release something and say, I'm bored of that, forget it, can't be bothered?
I believe, yeah. I am not a lawyer.
Okay, right.
Looks in here. But most things, if you go read a warranty document, it will say something along the lines of, nah, 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 nah.
And it is amazing what we buy these days, which go into our house, which connect to our routers, which do all sorts of interesting things. And, you know, how often do they get updated? Do they update the moment you buy them? Do they update subsequently? Gosh.
So the European Cyber Resilience Act covers things like that you have there has to be an intent to be keep things secure. There is some bits about, well, you should be maintaining updates. Things should have life cycles that you should be, and you should be upfront and honest about the length of that life cycle. But one part specifically, and this is the part that PatchStack have got involved in, is this idea, well, you need to have a mechanism for people to tell you about vulnerabilities, and you need to act upon these. And there's two countering measures. So the first part is you have to be able to tell people, hey, this is the route that you can tell me if my stuff is insecure. Now, before we get there, it's worth emphasizing the word vendor.
Mm.
When this was all being initially proposed, lots of people in the open source community, where I am not a vendor. I am Bob. I am not a legal entity. I just release code. And a lot of people in the WordPress plugin repository are Bob. They just release code.
Yeah.
They are not an organization. They are not a company. They are not a vendor. And the definition of vendor is up for interpretation and hasn't been legally tested. But it could be that anybody who releases code ever accidentally becomes a vendor and has legal responsibilities. It could also turn out to be the opposite. There's people go, well, hang on, Bob, if you use Bob's software and Bob isn't claiming to be a company and things and gives it to you under a license that says do what you want with it, then Bob probably shouldn't have any responsibilities attached to it.
So if
that's a legal argument.
Yeah, so the way that fits into the WordPress ecosystem potentially then would be, I don't know, if you've got a giant plugin company and you've got hundreds of staff and you're very profitable, this all kind of ties together nicely. You can do this. But if you're, I don't know, Joe, and Joe's just released a plugin, which is, you know, something that they worked on as a bit of a hobby. It worked for them. They've put it into the repository. And there it is, but they're never going to look at it again. That maybe somebody will download it and it'll be nice if they do. Great. But are you saying that maybe in the future, Bob, did I say Bob, Joe, whoever, they might come under the purview of this potentially. We don't know, but plugin developers, yes. Theme developers. Oh gosh. So it's a real dragnet.
Oh yeah. And just like GDPR was. And then over time we've sort of like gone, okay, we'd be able to refine GDPR and what it actually means. And you'll notice that cookie things have got less and less annoying because people have started to realize, oh, actually, this doesn't affect me, or this does affect me in various ways. So anyway, who's going to be caught by this? Maybe a level of wait to be seen. What Patchstack have done is said, hey, we're going to provide you with some tools so you can basically point at and say, if you want to report vulnerabilities, go report them here. Now, before this, there were really two options. You could set something up yourself, and we'll talk a little bit about what you could do if you don't want to go down this route, or you could join something like a bug bounty scheme. Now, a vulnerability disclosure program is not a bug bounty scheme. A bug bounty scheme implies some sort of financial or some sort of gain in return, whereas a vulnerability disclosure program is, hey, tell us. We'll probably say thank you and we'll work with you to, you know, go through this process. But honestly, we're a free plugin. We haven't got any money. And so Patchstack's offering that for free. I believe the terms are if it's a free plugin, they will offer it for free. I think they have a paid for version, though I may have just made that up for people who have a premium plugin. If they don't, I'm sure it's on the roadmap.
Yeah.
And they will allow you to basically point at them, and they will handle the initial taking in of the vulnerability. They'll flag it. They'll decide whether it's even worth your time seeing it or whether it's just pure spam, and work with you to get the vulnerability report out, potentially getting the CVE through them and all of this stuff. This work will work alongside their bug bounty scheme. And I'm not entirely sure that they haven't gone into many details of how when one takes over from the other, because both Patchstack and WordFence both offer bug bounties for certain sized plugins. Well, they'll give you monetary rewards if you find vulnerabilities. And one of the things about the Cyber Resilience Act that might be a good thing is that there is a duty of care on the plugin developers to put out information about how to report vulnerabilities. But it also says that you have to, once you've done that duty of care, you don't have to go above and beyond.
Okay.
That works. So that actually, you might actually see less bug bounties that aren't specifically managed by companies. People like Patchstack and WordFence probably still carry on, but your individual people on things like HackerOne, you might actually see them reduce. So there is still a lot of, well, is this good for the industry? Are we actually going to see it all come back down? If you didn't want to go with somebody like Patchstack, if you run a free plugin or you run on a, or you have a website and you're not quite sure what you could do, couple of things you can do today. One of which is if you run a plugin, in your README, have very clear instructions of what you want someone to do. So have a section called security and say, email this address. Explain what you want, the steps you want the person to take. If you run a website, there is something called security.txt, nice. Which is a text file that will have details in there of what you want your step to take. And if you create an SOP, so a standard operating procedure, but it's basically just step-by-step guide of what you want people to do, that's effectively what a VDP is. Now, PathFlag's going to offer you ones with lots of tools and lots of bits in there, and they're offering it for free. So there's, you know, you should seriously look at it. At least go through and decide if it's for you. But if you want to simplify it, then something like security.txt, and if it's a very small problem plugin, you probably can just get away with literally having a thing in your README file that says security, please email us.
Right.
And leave it at.
Yeah, because one of the fears of legislation like this is it kind of, I don't know, it scares developers into thinking, okay, the ambulance chasing lawyers are going to come after me and, or, you know, I'll be up for a broken website somewhere out on the web that I have never seen or heard of because I had this plugin sitting in the repo. So that chilling effect, whether or not it's going to reduce the WordPress.org repo contributions, you know.
There's the author of the software Curl.
Oh, yeah.
Regularly gets various legal threats.
Oh, gosh.
From across all sorts of things. Because curl is used absolutely everywhere you imagine. If something connects to the internet, there's a reasonable chance it uses curl somewhere.
Yeah.
There are huge things like car software and all sorts of things. And curl has to be distributed with its license, which, because it starts with the letter C, tends to be higher up most lists. So if you're going to set your license alphabetically, it's quite high up. And it turns out, there aren't that many A and B softwares that are quite as ubiquitous as curl. So it's the first license people hit is the GPL license for curl or what. Pretty sure it's under GPL. And the name and information of the curl dev is on that thing.
Oh, gosh.
So he gets emails for all the legal stuff for various bits. And just the idea of that is terrifying. I don't know, it has put me off doing stuff in the past
right.
where I've gone, no, this is just going to be too much of a bother.
Yeah, you know, if the...
I don't want to provide something without a warranty.
Yeah, if...
But I don't want to provide a warranty.
If you've provided a piece of software and it breaks, then, or rather, you know, something bad happens, whatever that may be, as a consequence of that piece of software, and you literally did it as a hobby, and all of a sudden you've got the lawyers coming after you, that's fairly profound, isn't it? That's a real a sea change. And let's see what the European Cyber Resilience Act does. My guess is, as with all this legislation, that the intention isn't to kind of come and hit the small developer over the head with a giant hammer. It's more to impress upon, I don't know, the software vendors who are all in our back pockets, like the phone manufacturers and the bigger players, to do the right thing and to update things, which frankly should have been being updated forever anyway, but haven't been. And so we're kind of like backfilling the security posture, which wasn't good enough, but it has had this potentially chilling effect on the WordPress ecosystem as well. Gosh.
As a sort of last thing, it was originally developed with the idea of hardware, but
right, yeah,
your internet of stuff,
nobody mentions that stuff anymore, do they? It was all the rage.
Yeah, and that was where it was initially sort of going in.
Yeah.
Then it sort of in the dragnet picked up people like the car manufacturers. That sort of then into software. So it's interesting how it's progressed from a point where it's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. These things have life cycles and yeah, they're just abandoned after 20 seconds. But then he's going to pick up, open source software that's empowering the web, but is also being maintained purely by individuals and small communities and not necessarily by a company or anybody who's ever thought of themselves in their entire life as a vendor.
Yeah, Interesting. Okay, so that was that. That was all the patch stack stuff. So the last of the three main stories that have got nothing to do with tips and tricks is honestly something I don't know anything about. It's an acronym, I think. COPS. Maybe it isn't. Maybe that's just the name of it, but it's C-U-P-S, all capitalized on the show notes. And this is a Linux thing. And I don't really use Linux in any way, shape, or form these days. Back in the day, I dabbled, but only, you know, in ways that could break things. So what's been going on over with Linux and COPS? What even is COPS?
Oh, so, first of all, Nathan...
Spoken like a true nerd.
You do use Linux. Because
I do.
You run a website.
I do use Linux.
But for most people, Linux is probably best known for the thing that runs their website. But you have like desktop machines and workstations and people use Linux every single day. And a security researcher who on Twitter goes by the handle EvilSocket came nice. Out and said, I have found some. And this is a very well-respected person. And he said, basically, he came out saying, I found something. But his bigger argument was, I'm getting very frustrated with software vendors. So the distributors, so people like Ubuntu, Red Hat, he was saying, they're just dragging their heels. They're not fixing things. And the people responsible for fixing this vulnerability that I found, I cannot get them to do what, to come out with things. So I'm going to break the normal rules of responsible disclosure and I'm giving them till X date and I am going to publish this vulnerability regardless.
Oh.
Now, responsible disclosure is something that is slightly hotly contested. And it's the idea that you work with the vendor and you won't disclose anything until the vendor has a patch in place and you both agree that it has set. And this responsible thing to do, as in you will work with them. When you don't have that ability to work with somebody and you unilaterally disclose a vulnerability, you're going to come in for a little bit of shtick.
Yeah.
And people are going to be grumpy with you.
Yep.
Because you are effectively releasing it into the wild, and a bad actor may be able to abuse and use it. So, hotly contested. Lots of eyes suddenly went and were looking at him and going, okay. And he's like, this is a really serious vulnerability.
So it's really picking up how detrimental it was going to be.
Bearing in mind, the entire web, effectively, yes, IIS is a thing. And so there are some Windows machines out there. But if you go to most websites, they are running probably a Linux system.
Yeah.
A lot of scared people going, what on earth is he about to release?
The sky is going to fall in.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, he never at any point said this affects your web server, etc. He just said it was a major Linux, but it's in all the Linux distros. And then he releases it.
Oh.
And it's a vulnerability in a piece of software called COPS, which is indeed distributed to most Linux distros, including Ubuntu, including on things like Fedora and Red Hat, or Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which is what powers a lot of websites, Debian, NixOS, all of these. But COPS is a system for interacting with printers.
Dun, dun. Okay.
It lets you print things from your computer to a printer. Now, COPS does have a feature which allows you to network prints. So people can send jobs to the computer, which then passes that job to the printer. He found a vulnerability in that process.
Okay.
So you could basically send a malicious payload saying, ha-ha, I'm a printer, I want you to print this thing. But really, it exposes and it could cause a problem on the computer that it was sending it to. So we never got to the printer. It was basically, I'm a print job. Oh, no, I'm not really. Ha-ha, I'm in this evil software and I'm going
to... Oh, so it could be used as like a beachhead, a foothold, if you like, to get further in. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Ah, okay.
But here's the critical thing. To use this, you had to remotely be able to connect to the computer to send the payload in the first place.
Oh gosh. So you had to be able to log into that computer in a remote way. So at that point, you owned the computer anyway.
So in 99% of the scenarios you were going to be in, you were you sending that data to that machine, you are in a trusted, either in a trusted network or you have some sort of privileged connection to it. There are not many cups printers out on the internet. Where you can just randomly print stuff off. If they are, they get abused very quickly. So the entire sort of Linux community went, what?
Yeah. It sounds like somebody let off a whoopee cushion, kind of like,
But it brings out some interesting problems because when it was released, it had this CVSS score, which is a mechanism for determining how scary a vulnerability is.
It's out of 10,
and these scores
right?
It's out of 10. Yeah. And it got 9.9.
Oh, it does sound severe. That sounds bad.
Which is like terrifying. Yeah. Because it's so easy to do. You can send a packet of data to the machine and it will, over the network, potentially be compromised. But only if it was all set up like this in a nice chain that works in the way.
Okay.
And this is a problem with CVSS scores generally. We use them because they are a valued score. We use these for when we work out vulnerabilities on web applications. If your WordPress plugin has a vulnerability, it will probably have a CVSS score attached to it. And you might notice that they always sound really scary. And that's because one of the sort of factors is, can this be done over a network? Now, when we're talking about things like WordPress plugins, well, the only time you interact with a WordPress plugin, unless you're actually SSHing onto the server and interacting with it via something like WPCLI, is through the browser over a network. So every vulnerability in WordPress has a network component to it.
Right.
So this is why you'll see that our CVSS scores for something like cross-site scripting, something very minor or something that can be only exploited in a very limited way, still have CVSS scores in 6, 7, 8, and 9, even though they aren't, which makes them sound terrifying when they're sometimes are and sometimes really not. And this is a good example of this, where it has this huge, really scary score. Genuinely would be a really scary bug in 1994, assuming you were the one person on the network. Right. So it'd be great fun to mess around with, and you could take over the printer server in your local building several decades ago.
So this is a scenario where the score itself, if you've got this exact configuration of hardware and software, then it truly is a 9.9, and it is that thing. It's terrifying, and it really could be exploited and do considerable harm. But in 99.9% of the cases, nobody's got that configuration of hardware. So that's a curious thing about the score then, I guess. The score doesn't give you any, doesn't tip you off to actually, it's a 9.9 given this. They only have a score. They only have the top line number. I mean, presumably there's some supporting documentation that goes
there
with
that. There have been various attempts to break it down and give you, like, in this scenario, basically to provide the scenario set to go with it. But yeah, CVSS scores on their own are just a number.
Yeah.
And we have to take that number and translate it. And one of the things that I spend a lot of my time doing is talking to clients on Friday afternoons, because inevitably security vulnerabilities come out on a Friday.
Oh, of course.
With my clients going, you need to catch. Is the end of the world about to happen? And me going and having to read through the vulnerability and go, well, do you make use of this really weird little sub feature? Yeah. And do you have contributors? Yes. Cool. Do you care if your contributors can, do this? No, just turn that button off. Right, there we go.
We've done it.
Solved the problem.
Yeah.
And that's translation layer just doesn't come through on a score.
Yeah.
A score is score. It is scary, but it's only scary in the scenario that's been identified through with the vulnerability report. If you don't have any of that part of the chain, you don't actually have that vulnerability, but you have the potential to it. So then we have to think about risk and risk management and risk assessment. And it's like, ugh.
So,
and on a Friday night, you just want to be.
Yeah, that's right. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you now know what CUPS is, and you've learned about three different things. So, we've done the WP engine and automatic rivalry and how that's impacted people. We've done the VDP, the Vulnerability Disclosure Program from Patchstack. And we've also done about this problem in Linux with COPS that isn't quite the problem that it was billed as. And that's the main body. What's that?
And for common Unix printing
system. I, of course, knew that. This is my waking, you know, this is my waking study, acronyms of Linux. That's what I do all day. I didn't know that. That's good. So,
So I could have, with enough time.
Yeah, you had enough time to Google it. So there's the main body of what we're doing today. But as we're always going to do, hopefully, if Tim comes back, we'll do a few little bits and pieces of WordPressy stuff towards the end that you could implement in a heartbeat. So what have we got this time around, Tim?
I don't know. That sounded quite fresh.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was, yeah, I've really built it. You've got to be quick now. You've got to really do a sprint.
So, I think we've been talking about lots of things today. I was almost going to do like one on automatic updates, and I thought that would be possibly in bad taste to do a...
We can do that another time when it's safe.
Yes. Yeah. So instead, we're going to look at users, and specifically, something that I do on every time I arrive on a client site is the first place that I go visit is the users section.
Nice.
Whether I'm doing that on the server or whether I'm going into the admin slash users. And the very first thing I do is click at the top. You have a little bit which shows you the different roles, and I click on the one marked administrators.
Right.
And then what will happen is I will sign.
Oh, because it will be more than one.
Well, it will be, yes. The length of my side depends on the number of administrators. If it's more than 10, it's a deep sign.
Yeah.
The one that I looked at a few weeks ago was 27.
Hey. All of them still with the company, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
All of them.
And what was worrying is there were 28 users in total of the site. So what that last user did to deserve to be dropped out of the administrator.
Oh, gosh.
But needless to say, that site did not need 27 administrators. Your site probably doesn't need 10, fully. One or two administrators probably does need. So here's a really simple thing to do. Assuming you have permission to do this and you are the person who's meant to be doing this.
That's right. Okay.
Go and select all the administrators and drop everybody down to editor.
Nice.
And do not tell a single person. And see how long it takes.
Yes, see how many emails you get. You're predicting almost none, right? That change will be so undetectable by most regular users of WordPress, they won't even care.
Absolutely. Okay. Common ones that by dropping everybody down to an editor, they won't have access to doing certain things like adding other users. That's the usual one that pings.
Yeah.
Someone maybe is a HR manager or job it is to add users, they will discover they cannot.
It'll be when somebody wanted to add a 28th admin. They suddenly logged in and said, we must add another admin. We've only got 28. That's 27. Yeah,
that person's going to be the first person who's going to be caught up. The next person might be if you have a web designer.
Okay.
But they're not normally responsible for doing updates, but they do occasional things on the site and they want to edit the site, especially with full site editing.
Yeah.
They'll go, I suddenly can't edit certain things. They'll be your second person. But each time they come to you, you can have a conversation that says, why do you need this? And slowly but surely, you can write a little document for your website. Even if you're like a really small company, a little document that says who should have administrator access, how long they should have it access for, and what happens when you get to the end of that.
Right.
Because you don't want to be in a scenario where you're looking at your 28 administrators and three of them are web hosts.
That's quite common, I'll bet, isn't it? You know, at some point, some support really agent logged in and needed admin access or claimed to need admin.
SEO companies, marketing agencies. Yeah. That ex-employee who you left under the cloud of disgust, all of these people shouldn't be on there.
Yeah.
But there are a few other people who you think, they definitely should be there, but they don't need to be. Your boss. Imagine a world where you are a CEO of a major company and you have this tendency to take to the company website and randomly rant.
Yeah. Stop them.
Should you be allowed to do that?
Stop them.
That's one question that's maybe in place. But should you be allowed to fiddle with plugins and themes and all that stuff? is that your job? Is that your role? And the answer is that for most bosses, no. They probably shouldn't be an administrator, but they want to be because they want to feel like they should be. And in that scenario, you can use plugins and you can create other roles.
Right.
So you can give that person a role of super duper boss or the Uberist administrator, and then you can give them the same privileges of absolute.
I like your idea better. Just knock them all down to editor and see who complains. That seems like a great idea.
Knock them all down, set them all to editor, see who complains. I've done this enough times to know it is gloriously quiet.
Yeah, you know, unless you're a real regular WordPress user, the difference in the UI between editor and admin, I mean, obviously, if you nerd out, you'll spot it almost immediately. But if you're just a normal user of a website publishing content and clicking, you know, into posts and pages and modifying them, what have you, it's just going to feel just the same. You know, there'll be a little bit less in the UI, but very unlikely that you're going to notice or complain. That is a top tip, Tim. I like that. Top tips from Tim. What a great acronym. Oh no, I think we've just come up with the title for the show right at the end. Gosh.
No.
Okay. Well, that's been embargoed. But that's a good one. Find the admin users, knock them all down to editor, and see if you get fired or see if anybody complains. But I like it. And I think that probably rounds off our show. What do you think?
Sounds good.
I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you for joining me. Hopefully the brouhaha that was mentioned at the top of the show that we dwelled on at the beginning won't be with us next time we record. That'll be towards the end of the year. Might not even air until January, something like that, but we'll see. But Tim, really appreciate you. And wpldn.uk/masterclass, if you're listening to this and it's before Halloween and you fancy an in-person event in London, go and check that out. timnash.co.uk/newsletter if you fancy subscribing to Tim's newsletter and finding out what he's up to and the tips that he does over there. And don't forget that Tim is available for work. Go to timnash.co.uk and get in touch in that way. And I don't know if you hang out on the socials, but if you do, where do you hang out?
To be honest, you will find me pretty much only on LinkedIn or on Mastodon. I'm on Fosterdon/TNash, and I'm at TNash on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Don't find me. I'm normally there. I don't tend to do the other ones for.
No, I understand.
Not good for your mental health.
There's a whole nother episode in there, but we'll knock it on the head there. And I'll say thanks, Tim. Really appreciate it. And I'll see you on the next one. Take it easy. Well, I hope that you enjoyed that. As you heard, a brand new show with Tim Nash, Feeling Insecure. That was episode one. Really hope that you enjoyed it. Head over to the wpbuilds.com website and search for episode number 392. You'll find it there. Leave us a comment. We'd really appreciate it. Tim will be back roughly every 3 months to do something similar, to outline some of the things that have happened in the security space and to give you some top tips and tricks. Really enjoyed that. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also joined by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for keeping the lights on over at the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that's all I've got time for this week. I hope that you enjoyed it. Don't forget, wpldn.uk/masterclass if you'd like to join Tim and I in London at the end of October. The other one to mention is wpbuilds.com/black. Get your deals on there, bookmark it so that you've got the best WordPress experience possible in the run-up to Black Friday. Okay, truly the end. Nothing else to say except here comes some cheesy music. Stay safe. Bye-bye for now. The best.